Welcome to Gruesome, your horrific true crime podcast. I am Meg, and I didn't think of a name for you today. I'm sorry.
Cootie Queen?
Huh?
I'm a cootie
queen. You lint licker. Yay. Connie is going to tell us about the El Segundo cop killing. Segundo?
Segundo, yep.
Segundo, okay.
Thanks for sticking with us, guys. It's been a crazy week as usual, but for Christmas this year, we were given more than just presents. We hosted my husband's, like my direct in-laws, and they gifted us some cooties, and I'm just hoping it's cooties and not COVID, but tis the season.
Cooties, not COVID sounds like a great t-shirt.
Yeah.
Now or like on a mask or something.
give cooties, not COVID.
There you go. Yeah, that's great. There it is.
I'm hoping all of you guys are staying healthy during this busy holiday season. Nothing has made me more firm in my I don't want to go anywhere than feeling like we all do.
I've been getting sick this week.
Because we talked about this. There's two different types of being sick when you have children. There is dad sick, and then there is mom sick. And dad sick is like you get to sleep, you get to like lay on the couch, and mom sick is like
you have to do all the same stuff.
You have to do all of these things as well. So hashtag mom life.
Anyway, blessed.
Yes.
Too blessed to be stressed.
And it's so hard because my daughter is like the main culprit right now, and she watches a lot of Disney movies, and she likes to like lean in like very passionately, and she tells me that I'm her true love's kiss, and she's like and I want to just like Heisman her across the room, but like
Heisman her. Boof.
It's gonna Get be a no for me, child. I don't know you this week. Go away.
Heisman her. That's hilarious.
Well, anyway. I did too. And now I feel bad that I So we're shifting gears for the last episode of 2021. We're putting away our Christmas decorations and the Christmas cases, and we're returning to our regularly scheduled true crime programming. Tonight, we're heading back to 1957. We're heading to El Segundo, a suburb of Los Angeles. In 1957, El Segundo was considered a relatively safe area. Population was around 14,000 in 1960. I am assuming there wasn't much change from 1957, but the census didn't go back that far. So 1960 is the best I could do. It's an area that only covers about 5 square miles. So it's obviously like not very big. None of the suburbs in LA are really big. There's just like a lot of them, you know?
There are a lot of them. That's why when people are like, oh, I went to LA, and they're like, where did you go? LA. Like, no, there's a lot of LA. You got to pick one.
Pick it. In 2021, Los Angeles County is one of the most dangerous places to be a police officer in the entire country. If you've ever been to LA, you know it's not like exactly Pleasantville. It's a cool place to visit. And like the whole idea of LA, I love. It's what brings a lot of people out west to California, you know, big city dreams. But you've lived in California, so you know that it's like, I feel like LA as a whole, like I've been there, and it's, I feel like it's a different state in entirety. Like it's,
yeah, some of it's really gross.
Yeah.
Some of it's not. Some of it's fine.
Yeah.
But some of it, I'm just like, ugh.
And
I prefer up north if I have to go when I go to visit.
Now, I love SoCal. I love it. Like, if it weren't for the traffic, because I hate to drive in traffic.
It's awful.
And like, I didn't have like the kids and the husband, I would 100% be a Cali girl. Like I love the weather. I wouldn't live in LA specifically though. And it's, like I said, it's nothing, it's just too busy for me. And it's I feel like, I mean, we know a lot about Los Angeles, and even back in like the 60s and 70s, it's kind of like the Wild West. Everything, anything and everything goes. It's lawless sometimes. But like I said, in 1957, oh, and don't come at me. Like, I love California. I love it. I visit it. I love it. I'm not trying to like shit on Los Angeles. I'm just stating the fact.
We're not. Yeah, we're just talking about it. It's fine. Yeah. I would go in a heartbeat. I would love to visit my family out there.
I would just love to go, like, back.
Just for vacay.
We went a few years ago, and, like, we did, like, the Disneyland and, like, L.A. and, like, the whole area. And specifically Anaheim, if we're going to be talking about, like, which part that we were at. Like, we were in that area. But we were driving
in Disneyland area.
Yeah, like we drove down like Hollywood Boulevard, and I was like, this is not what I was expecting.
Exactly. It's never, if you haven't been there and you get there, you're like, oh, this is different. Yeah, like,
and I, because I have
movies
been
really hyped it up. Media really hyped it up.
But I mean, they do that with freaking anything. Like, I had a friend before tell me, they're like, oh, Indiana, it's like a bunch of big cities. And I was like, what? No, we have like three. What are you talking about? But she had seen a movie. She had seen a movie that was like Indianapolis, and she thought like the entirety of Indiana was like that. But anyways, before we get like people bitching that we waited too long.
Too out of depth.
In 1957, the city of El Segundo, it wasn't as dangerous as Los Angeles County, obviously. Or as dangerous as it is today. On the night of July 22nd, 1957, young officers Milton Curtis, who was 25, and Richard Phillips, who was 28, they were working the night shift. Milton Curtis was a rookie. He'd only been working with the department since May of that year. He was married. He had two young children. Richard Phillips had been with the department for about 2 years. He was married. He had three young children. He was specifically known for his marksmanship with a gun throughout the force. Like, I guess he was like really good with it. That
probably a good career to be good with a gun in.
Exactly. The night started like any normal night. The two officers parked on the corner of Sepulveda and Rosecrans Boulevard. I know I'm not saying that right. I am so sorry. My mouth.
Okay, you've only had to say it once or twice, so no problem.
Yeah. The marked black and white patrol car sat at the crossroads, keeping an eye on things. And at the time, it seemed like a pretty quiet night. And I instantly pictured like old cop movies with like the classic looking police cars that we don't see anymore.
Yeah.
Before they turned into like the fancy spaceships that they are now.
It's like classic, like black and white movie.
Yeah. I just pictured two police officers drinking coffee, waiting for something to happen in the sleepy little area. Just before midnight, the officers see a 1949 Ford sedan pull up to the red light and slow down, but proceed to just drive right through it. Pretty standard traffic stop for the officers. They pulled out, turned their lights on, pulled the Ford sedan over. Officer Phillips walked up to the car while Officer Curtis provided backup from the vehicle. Officer Phillips had his ticket book in hand, prepared to write a citation. A second patrol car pulled up, and I'm assuming, you know, like they heard the call over the radio. They were in the area. They pulled up, but they didn't stay because it seemed to them like a normal traffic stop. Officers James Gilbert and Charlie Porter were in the car, and they said when they pulled up, Officer Phillips waved a paper at them like, hey, everything is good. So they pulled away. Literally minutes after the officers pulled away, a call came through on the radio from Officer Phillips saying that they had been shot and they need an ambulance right away. Officers Porter and Gilbert raced back to the scene, but it was too late. Officer Phillips had been fatally shot 3 times in his back, and Officer Curtis had been shot 3 times as he sat in the patrol vehicle. By the time the officers responded to the scene, the suspect had already fled. There was no sign of them. Hundreds of El Segundo officers and officers from surrounding cities scoured the suburbs all night. The 1949 Ford sedan was recovered. It had been stolen earlier that night, but there was no sign of the person who was responsible for the deaths of the two officers. when talking about Officer Curtis, his wife at the time, Jean, she remembers the night, and she said that the young couple had gotten into a small argument, like many couples do. And she, like, they ended the conversation and she never got to say goodbye. And it's something that she thinks about all the time. She said that he was her first love and she never got over the first love. And she's like, I don't think anyone does, really, which in a situation like this, absolutely understandable. Yeah. She became a widow at age 23 and was left to raise her two children by herself. And Officer Phillips was left, his wife was left to raise their three children by herself. At the time of the vehicle being located, there had been no reports of the car being stolen. Police had no idea that this was no routine traffic stop because they're like, what the hell? Like, you know, we pulled up and like, they're like, hey, it's fine. Like, not a big deal. Like, what made this turn so deadly so quickly?
Yeah.
But that suspect never planned on being ticketed or taking in during that traffic stop. It wasn't until four teenagers were found roaming the streets, practically naked, terrified, and searching for help, the police would be able to start to put together a real timeline of what would make that routine traffic stop end in gunfire.
That sounds crazy.
What? Yeah. A couple hours earlier that night, 17-year-old Bob Duar had been at a summer party with his date, a friend, and his friend's date. On the way back to the party, they decided to do what teenagers did in the 50s, and they wanted to stop at an old oil field that was like made into a makeshift lover's lane.
Makeout point.
Yes. And I did find a report that had the names of the other three people involved, but they never officially came forward to the media or anything. And the girls at the time were only 15. So out of respect for them, I'm not going to talk about their names. It's not relevant to the case. As the teenagers were parked, someone knocked on the window and Bob rolled the window down. As soon as he did, a gun came through. He said that he remembers thinking, like, this has to be a prank. When the man said, this is a robbery. Very quickly, Bob Duar realized that the gun was in fact very real, and this was most definitely not a prank. The man was prepared with surgical tape, a flashlight, his gun. He put tape around their eyes and ordered the teenagers to take their clothes off, where he proceeded to bind their hands and their feet. The four teenagers were obviously very terrified. They did exactly what they were told. A quick trigger warning real quick. The man walked from the driver's side and to the passenger side and pulled one of the girls out of the car and raped her before ordering the four of them to walk forward to the field. Right before all of this, he robbed them, took all of their money. He tells the teenagers, I think I'm going to kill you. I want you to march out into the field. Duar remembers thinking, it just takes four bullets and we're all gone. They were paralyzed with fear, standing in a field without their clothes and not knowing what to expect. They were honestly, he said he was thinking that, like, this is it, like, we're going to die. But instead of a gunshot, they hear the car doors close and the 1949 Ford sedan drove away. By the time they were able to report the horrors that they experienced, officers were already responding to the murders of Officer Phillips and Officer Curtis.
How old were the boys?
They were... I read one report that said both of them were 17, and then I read like a few others that said Duar was 17 and his friends were 15.
Okay.
So they were all minors.
Can you imagine being like 17 years old, making out with your girlfriend? That's the scariest. That's so scary.
Yeah, I can't. Like, I cannot imagine that. Like, not even a little bit. Because, I mean, and you... If you have parked, you know, like, you're not really paying attention.
We've been a lot of cases like this of, like, yeah, couples parking and, you know, the worst happening. And it's just every time I hear it, every time I'm always just like terrifying, just terrifying. That's,
it gave me like the Tex Arcana Phantom vibe.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking, too, when you were talking about this.
Yes.
Yeah. I was like replaying what I read in my mind about that. Yeah.
Yep. Early that morning, so like really like late at night type, you know, Howard Speaks, he was a crime scene investigator he arrived at the scene of the abandoned Ford sedan to photograph it. To his surprise, even after being rapidly shot 3 times, Officer Phillips was able to fire off 6 shots from his gun. Forensics had already determined at the scene of the murder that he had fired his gun. 3 of the bullets actually hit the sedan. 2 bullets were removed from the vehicle, leaving investigators to think maybe the suspect had been shot. Maybe there was 1 bullet still left in him, because they could see the bullet hole where it went into the car, but there was no evidence of the bullet inside the car.
Got it. So it went through, hit that person potentially.
Yes. In 1957, DNA testing obviously wasn't even being used. The first case for DNA testing didn't even, the first case was with DNA testing wasn't solved until 1986. So the only evidence that was available was fingerprinting, but with no electronic system to compare prints to, there wasn't much to be done with the prints. But Speaks assumed that the suspect was probably sweating, gripping the steering wheel really hard, and he was correct. He dusted the entire steering wheel column for prints, and he was able to lift 2 prints of a left thumb.
Good.
The only real evidence that investigators could go on was the report given by Officer Porter, who had pulled up to the scene and seen the suspect sitting there with Officer Phillips, and the report given by Bob Dewar and his friends. And obviously, Dewar and his friends' report is very accurate. He held the teenagers hostage for an hour and a half.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
A long time. Sounds like a noob move.
Mm-hmm. Police knew that the man was about 6 feet tall, around 200 pounds, had a notable Southern accent, short hair. Officer Porter noted that when he saw the suspect in the car, the way he held his head was a little bit weird. And he said that it seemed like the man was either very arrogant or frightened, probably both, to be honest. But that was it. They had no other clues to go on. The next night, a taxi was pulled over with a cab driver and a passenger in the back. The California Highway Patrol pulled him over because it appeared that the passenger in the back was drinking beer. And he also looked like the suspect that was wanted in the El Segundo murders. Sheriffs questioned him, thinking yeah, for sure we have our guy. And they did have a bad guy, just not the one they were looking for. The man in the back of the cab, all right, follow me for just a second, guys, because I was like, what the hell? What are the odds?
Yeah. What is it?
The man in the back of the cab was actually a cab driver himself who had murdered his last passenger that he had in his car. It was a cattle rancher from Texas. He had come up to visit his daughter. The daughter called a cab, or he called a cab from his daughter's house around noon, and then he wasn't seen again.
What?
Yeah.
And did they they were like, you look like a murderer. Guess what? That person was.
Yeah. But when they brought it, they called the sheriff's department, because I guess I didn't realize that the highway patrol doesn't, I mean, I knew they didn't do criminal cases, but they were like, hey, this kind of looks like the El Segundo suspect. We're going to call the sheriff's department. So the sheriff's department, they were frisking him. They searched, when they were doing the search, they found he had a wad of money in his shoe. And
in his shoe? I was not expecting you to say shoe. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And they knew that the suspect had robbed the teenagers. I don't think the teenagers had $400 on them. But
no, especially not in 1957. No yeah. Way.
So they brought him in because they're like, this is it. This is the guy. We have it. And they start pressuring him. They're talking about the cops and how they were murdered. And he was like, whoa, 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 whoa.
I only murdered this one guy.
He's like, I thought you were talking about the cattle rancher. And they were like,
I'm sorry. What? I shouldn't laugh, yeah. But it's just wait, I didn't kill cops, just the other guy.
Yeah, but he didn't know. This is what he says. During the interview, the detectives get a knock on the door and they're like, hey, a body of this man was found. We think that this guy did it, because he's like, oh yeah, I went to Riverside and I picked this guy up and then I drove him around Riverside looking for girls and and we played poker. He like did this like really long, drawn out,
very elaborate.
Story. Yeah, and you know, like if there's too many details, you're like, okay, this is
not true. You're not driving around looking for girls playing poker with this guy who just needed a cab ride.
And he said that the guy. Once they're like, we know you killed the officers in El Segundo. That's when he was like, wait, the guy's dead. And the suspect was trying to say that he didn't know, like he only hit the guy like a couple times. He's like, I didn't know he was dead. I just heard him talking about like he had all this money and I just took the money. But like the autopsy would later show he hit the guy 11 times with a tire iron. Like, yes, you knew what you did. Like that's like. 11 times.
That's crazy. Yeah.
So it's back to square one. And there wouldn't be any leads in this case for 3 years.
Whoa. Man,
oh, that's nothing, honey.
I'm doing math. So I'm like 7, 58, 60. Gotcha.
Manhattan Beach homeowner Doug Tully was digging up weeds on his property when he found 2 watches and a .22 caliber handgun. When he turned them into police, because he's like, hey, these are not mine. They were able to trace the serial number of the gun because the watches were identified by the 2 teenage boys. They were like, yeah, that's what was taken from us. I guess they weren't teenagers at this point. But they were able to trace the serial number for the gun to a Sears in good old Shreveport, Louisiana. Sears records showed that the gun had been purchased by a G.D. Wilson. The gun cost, and I had to put this in there for anyone who is like a gun enthusiast. The gun cost a whopping
$29.95.
Which I know in the 50s is like, okay, but can you imagine right now being able to be like, I'll take that gun for $29.95 from Sears?
I've bought way weirder things. For
$29.95. Mm-hmm.
Probably from Sears. Sears is no more though, right? There's not Sears doesn't exist anymore.
I don't know. I used to work at Sears. Does. It was one of my first jobs.
I remember.
It was real weird. We had to carry these.
I'm gonna look up like Sears.com. Hold on, I need to know. Oh, it's still a thing. Okay, can still shop online. I think they just don't have stores. They must not.
Maybe just stores. Like I think in towns like where we grew up and like our small malls, like maybe those are the ones that don't exist. It's like a Kmart.
Oh, Kmart.
So police wasted no time. They were checking the entire area around the Sears. They found that a George D. Wilson rented a room at the YMCA near the Sears store. The address that was on the paperwork was actually a fake address in Miami, Florida. It didn't even exist. Shocker.
Surprise.
For years, police would search the country for every single George D. Wilson that they could find. But none of them were ever the guy they were looking for.
Is your name George D. Wilson?
Yeah, they would compare the, you know, like fingerprints, like, nope, you're not it. But real quick. So in 1958, an article ran in True Detective magazine calling the suspect the Lover's Lane Bandit. And this brings us back to last week talking about names because one, Bandit makes it seem like he just robbed someone. And even if
Bandit does just sound like somebody who's stealing.
And even if the crime at Lover's Lane was the only crime that was committed, he still raped a 15-year-old girl in front of 3 of her friends. And
and killed cops, right? Yeah. Like,
well, I'm saying, like, if he hadn't killed the police officers, if he had only committed the crimes at Lover's Lane, for instance, you're calling him a bandit, but he raped a girl. Like,
And threatened to murder them. And
and took their clothes. Yeah, exactly. So that nickname is a 0 out of 10 because
Bandit is also like kind of cool too. Makes you sound like a cowboy bank robber or something.
Yeah, like the Sticky Bandits from Home Alone.
Also not cool people, but great movie. Great scenes.
But if I was briefly reading a headline in this True Detective magazine, as I would be if I lived in 1958, and I just see like Lover's Lane Bandit, I wouldn't even like, I probably wouldn't dive into it. It's not, I mean, why don't you call him like what he was, like a rapist, a murderer, like
the worst,
the worst, like call him a sinister name, not like, oh, Bandit. Cause I'd have been like, oh, what did he steal? Not like, oh, he raped and murdered two, like he raped a girl and murdered two cops. And like, not only it's horrific.
What would they call, what did they call rapists in like 1958, 1957?
You know,
did they just call them rapists? But I feel like they would have had like a, not as violent, maybe like a sounding.
Sexual assault or.
Yeah. I don't know.
Forced intercourse.
Something. Something that sounds like more dirt. Like. Yeah. Yeah. Like very, like rape is too dirty for them to say at that time.
In True Detective Magazine.
In True Detective Magazine.
But we digress. So police had a few leads over the years, but they never had a break in the case. When homicide detectives Kevin Lowe and Dan McElderry inherited the case, which, by the way, boss police names, 10 out of 10 for those. 0 out of 10 for Lover's Lane Bandit, but 10 out of 10 for Kevin Lowe and Dan McElderry. Detective Lowe called the case ice cold. He said, it's colder than being cold. And as we both know, what's cooler than being cool?
Ice cold. All right, all right, all right, all right. Were you just counting that I would do that?
Yeah, I knew you would. I knew you would do it. That's why I set the whole thing up. And what's cool is that in the 45 years, I'm going to say that again. In the 45 years since the murders and rape occurred and the trail had went cold, technology literally went to the moon and back. Like it's not even the same type of thing. Like literally went to the moon. In September 2002, a call came through to the El Segundo Police Department from a woman who said that her late uncle bragged about being the murderer of the El Segundo police officers. Detectives Lowe and McElderry immediately got to work on the case. And this,
like,
was a,
what's his name?
And this was a big deal in the city. Like, this is the biggest cold case they had. It involved two of their own police officers, which was like an even more incentive to close the case. Officers pulled the original prints that the crime scene investigator Howard Speaks had originally lifted from the scene. The prints were sent to a crime lab to see if they could be cleaned up. And they could, because it's, you know, 45 years later. At the lab, technician Dale Falicon and Don Keir immediately knew that the prints from the crime scene did not match the prints that were provided to them of the new suspect. And these were like fingerprint experts. They were like, nope, not the guy.
This isn't that person.
However, post 9/11, the FBI created the nationwide computer database called the Automated Fingerprint Identification System, or AFIS. I like it as much as I like CODIS.
And it AFIS sounds way cooler too.
Yeah, AFIS. It had copies of every criminal fingerprint from every state in the entire country.
Nice.
The new digital image was input in the system, and literally in minutes, the man that had eluded police for almost half a century was on their screen from a crime that was committed over 2,000 miles away on the opposite coast.
What?
Mm-hmm. Gerald Mason was born on January 31st.
And it's not a George.
No.
But it does start with G's. G.
The name was surprising. I know. Fake.
It was fake.
It's a fake name. He was born on January 31st, 1934. He was not a career criminal. The fingerprint was from an arrest after a burglary charge in Columbia, South Carolina, the year before the murders. After he was released from jail, he hitchhiked to California. On the way, he stopped in Shreveport, Louisiana, where he purchased a gun under the alias George D. Wilson. After the murders, he went right back to Columbia, South Carolina, and he didn't live a life of crime. It was literally the complete opposite. And it's not like he had a secret life, like we often see with these type of cases. He literally, like, was upstanding. He was a prominent business owner where he made a small fortune buying, selling, and running gas stations. He got married. He had two daughters. He had three grandchildren. He was an army veteran like prior to his arrest, who in 2003 was a wealthy retiree who was just living out his life golfing, hanging out with his wife, Betty, and spending time with his daughters and grandchildren.
What?
Mm-hmm.
You just like get a wild streak or something?
Well, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Detective Lowe and McElderry knew that they needed more than 45 plus year old fingerprints. They really hit the ground when it comes to like our favorite good old fashioned police work. They were able to locate and pull original documents where he had signed for the room that he stayed in at the YMCA, which I didn't know you could do that. I didn't know. I think of the YMCA now and I think of like a gym with like Zumba classes.
Yeah.
But it's, I didn't realize that no, it was like.
Yeah, it's like a shelter.
Yeah, I didn't know that. When they brought in Paul Edholm, he was one of the country's leading forensic document examiners. He was able to compare the document from the YMCA with the eye exam form for Mason's license, which after a certain age in South Carolina, you have to have an eye exam. Like, and if you fail your eye exam, you have to go to like,
I don't understand what that means. Please explain.
Yeah, you have to have an eye exam. I know this because fun fact, I used to do this in South Carolina. So you have to like go to an optometrist. They have to sign off saying like, yes, you indeed can see. This is what your best corrected vision is. And then you take that to the DMV. They were also able to pull a title from a car he had bought in like 1990 something. And he said that when he was able to compare the documents, that the handwriting jumped off the page. And it was one of those like, I got you. Like, I got you feelings. He said if you put one on top of the other, they were almost identical. He immediately called the sheriff's department and told him that he was 99.9% sure that the handwriting on the documents were all done by the same person. So at this point, the detectives from California went straight to South Carolina to get their man. They tailed him for a couple of weeks thinking like, and they were really confused because they were, it was weird to them.
Expecting.
To see that he was painfully normal. Like it wasn't what they expected to see. They didn't think they'd see a wealthy man living in the suburbs. When they knocked on Gerald Mason's door on January 29th, 2003, they said his jaw hit his knees. He kept saying, I don't understand. I don't understand. What are you doing here? He was days away from his 70th birthday when he was finally arrested. Police searched his home and found a collection of guns, including another rare 22 caliber pistol, similar to the one that was used in the murders. And then he said, you're homicide detectives? And as soon as he started to click, like, oh, shit, he said immediately, he's like, I think I need a lawyer.
It's like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you do, buddy.
Man.
You think?
Not surprising, but no one believed that this doting father, perfect neighbor, outstanding member of the community, great husband, could be a murderer or a rapist. One of his daughters like later gave an interview with People magazine and said that she couldn't have had a better father, that he was there for her always. Like he was a great grandpa. His neighbor that lived next door said that for over 30 years, Mason helped him out with everything from garage renovations to cutting down trees. And he would like check on neighboring widows and like make sure like they had things to.
It does sound like yeah, it sounds kind of nefarious. Check on the neighboring widows.
But he's like, he would help like install mailboxes. Like if they had electrical problems, he would help out. Like he was, and there was no, it's not like they dug into it and they were like, oh, actually he was still doing. No.
On the low, low.
Yeah.
He just did a crazy thing and then paid for him to get a normal life. I don't know.
I don't know.
It sounds like he robbed all these people, went back to South Carolina and like bought a gas station. That's what it sounds like you're telling me.
He was originally brought before a judge in South Carolina before being like he agreed to be transferred back to California to stand trial. But even though there was matching fingerprints and a handwriting match, police looked for at least one more damning piece of evidence that could not be refuted. So upon examination of the suspect, police discovered a bullet-shaped scar on his back where Officer Phillips had shot him as he tried to escape the scene.
Was the bullet still in him?
I don't know. It's been 50 years, so...
Wouldn't that be crazy if they pulled it out? They're like, it's a match!
He probably pulled it out, like I would think.
Yeah, probably. Got it pulled out somewhere at some point.
Deputy District Attorney Darren Levine said, the last thing that Officer Phillips did before he died was mark the man that killed him for life. A picture of him from that time period was also identified by Officer Porter, who he was one of the officers that had pulled up during the traffic stop, as well as a news reporter who, after Mason ditched the car, he got a ride from a news reporter. Yeah.
Like, that's the person who will talk.
Yeah, right? But what other person to seem normal to? The courtroom was packed with officers who were retired. They had moved on. They were no longer police officers, including an 80-year-old Howard Speaks, who came in with his little cane to watch Gerald Mason plead guilty to 2 counts of murder. And I'm not sure, why he wasn't charged with rape. I'm assuming it has something to do with either statute of limitations, evidence, or he did enter a plea agreement that allowed him to serve any time in South Carolina. But I'll talk about that in just a minute. So I don't know if that's why he wasn't actually.
He pled guilty, though.
He pled guilty, immediately.
He was like, yeah, that was me. Sorry. Mistakes were made.
He tried apologizing for his crimes, and he said, it's impossible to express to so many people how sorry I am. I do not understand why I did this. It does not fit in my life. It is not the person I know. I detest these crimes. I didn't have a family life. I didn't have any place to go, and things were not going well for me, so I took off to California. I bought a gun at Shreveport with the intention of using it simply as a deterrent. And so far as I was hitchhiking, he did not give a reason for raping the 15-year-old girl. He said that he didn't know. He didn't remember why. He remembers walking up on the teenagers intoxicated, but he doesn't know why he did any of that. But I'm just going to say you came loaded with supplies, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I'm going to call. Bullshit.
Yeah, I'm just confused as to why he would. Like, it's just this one-time thing that never happened again.
I have a theory about that.
Okay.
He did have a chilling answer when he was asked why he killed the 2 officers. And, his family is there. The victims' families are there. And he's speaking to all of them. And he said, I thought if I don't get them, they're going to get me. So when the officer turned away from me, I shot both officers, got back in the car, and drove away. And then he said, the crimes didn't fit his life. But like I said, he seemed really prepared with the tape, gun, flashlights when he robbed the 4 teenagers and raped one of the girls. He cried like a baby during the hearing, but no one was buying it except, probably his family, which honestly, I get that because he put up a damn good facade. It is not.
Yeah, that happened to my grandpa, and they were like, your grandpa did this. I'd be like, no, no way. What?
Yeah. And this is nothing against his family at all. I could not imagine someone knocking on my door and being like, hey, your dad is a murderer, and a rapist. I'd be like, shut up. No, he's not. I would be in a state of shock. It would be like, holy no, no, he didn't. And I honestly, I think I could be presented with a lot of evidence and I would still question it because that's not the dad that I know. He's never done anything where I would think that that's what he is capable of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's normal.
So that's a normal response. Carolyn Phillips, she's the daughter of Richard Phillips. She gave a victim's impact statement saying, your cowardly act shattered our lives forever. You caused our mother to become a widow with 3 babies to raise alone. There is no way to describe our pain. There is no way to describe the emptiness and anguish we have felt all of our lives without dad. We cannot and will not forgive you, which same.
Damn.
Yeah.
Also, if you were part of his family and you heard that statement, like, that would hit. That would hit pretty hard, I think. I'd
be like, shit. That would be, well, Keith Curtis, he is the son of Officer Curtis, who was murdered. He told the court that his sister had died the previous year. So she died never knowing who killed her dad, and said, Gerald Mason, your family may be shocked, but my family has been devastated. And I was like,
ooh.
And he said, like, you're not saddened by the crime. You're sad that you got caught. And I agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because
these people, they make it so long, you know, they make it until they're old and gray, and then they suddenly get busted, and it's like, oh no, how?
But to me, I feel like, and I could be reaching on this, and I'm sure someone's going to be like, you're a dumbass, Connie. No, but the 22 caliber gun, it's like a 9-round. It's very rare. Like it's not like a common gun you can get. And he had another one that was like the same in his house. So it's like,
but it wasn't the one, or they don't know if it was.
No, it was not the gun, because they had found that gun at it was buried in that guy's flower garden, or like wheat. Like,
oh, right. Yeah. Sorry, I forgot about that.
So like you have a gun that you know you murdered someone with a gun practically the same, but you keep another one at your house. Like, you're telling me that's not a trophy thing?
Yeah, a little trophy. Yeah, like, hey, yeah, look at this little thing.
And there are some people who it's exhilarating and like satisfying enough knowing they haven't been caught. And it's like, no, I haven't committed any crimes, but I committed these two big ones and no one fucking knows it's me. Like,
yeah. Ugh, that's crude. It's gross.
He was, obviously, he had pled guilty, so he was convicted of both counts of murder, sentenced to 2 consecutive life years with he had to serve a minimum of 7 years. He was granted his request to serve his time in South Carolina to be closer to his wife and children, which I get that. Like, I know, like, the mad for like his victims wants to be like, no, I don't give a shit. I hope he serves it in a place far away that I can't think of right now.
Like Guantanamo Bay or whatever. Was that like scary one that was really bad? Yeah.
But I also go back to, it is not his family's fault. And like the person that is their dad, husband, grandpa, that's, you know, like
it's he's still alive.
So in 2009, he was denied parole. He was 75 at the time. He would have been eligible for parole in 2024, but he died in prison in 2017. Serving 14 years. He was 83 when he died, but the state of California had vowed like he would never be released. So it wouldn't have mattered if he lived to his parole hearing or not. The investigators were given watches by the victim's family, and on the back, it was like, it had like transcribed, like, inscribed. Is that transcribed? That's not the right word.
No. It's not inscribed.
Yeah. I don't know why I said that.
Transcribed. I was like,
I know what transcription means, but sorry, guys. It's that sickness brain. I was like, what the hell? But it has, the watches say, thank you seems so small. And they said they carry them everywhere. And Harold speaks. He said that he didn't think he would ever live to see a break in the case. And like
that's awesome. Who called and said that they thought it was his uncle, his niece?
No, that person wasn't even the right person. It was just some lady who's like, hey, my late uncle, it's not even related, but this is what, like, they started digging everything back up because they're like, hey, you're breaking the case.
Oh, okay. So I must have like, my brain must have been processing, because I was like, wait, so what? Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now it has all clicked for me.
The lady who called in saying her uncle was the murderer. As soon as they compared fingerprints, they were like, nah.
Oh, that's right. That was the wrong fingerprints. Oh my gosh. I'm tired too. Because I'm like, wait, getting my stories all mixed up. Wow, that's awesome. I'm glad that they, I cannot believe that he just like went back and lived a life of.
That's what I don't get. Like
normalcy.
I wonder if he was always like checking her, like checking around his like shoulder, like, oh, like, are they going to come get me?
Or if he was.
Well, there are some like articles that you can read about it where it says like he was very arrogant throughout the whole thing. And so like maybe he didn't like maybe he really was like, nope, I got away with this. Look at my beautiful family. Look at all my accomplishments.
Like maybe his family was a trophy also. Like mm-hmm. I can have this.
I think so. Yeah. Like look, I can live this normal life. No one knows.
Woof. That's crazy.
It also freaked me the hell out. Like what don't I know about every single person that I know?
Yeah. Right. It did cross my mind. Like maybe I should ask my dad if he's ever murdered anyone.
No, you better stick with that plausible deniability.
That's true. Okay.
Because you would tell me, and I love your dad. He is one of my favorite people, but I'd be like, sorry, pops.
We got to drop a bomb on this one.
You heard it here first. Gruesome podcast.
That would be some breaking news. Well,
I was thinking about the situation at Lover's Lane and the trauma of being sexually assaulted is horrific in itself. Like I cannot even imagine. I don't want to have to imagine that. But forcing three other teenagers to literally listen to it is you're not a good guy. I don't care what type of family that you had afterwards. And like yeah. I said, this is no offense to his family, but nope.
Yeah, that's just...
You can't
use... It's so aggressive. And like it's one of those things you hear about and you're like, this is a person who has done this before, who will do this on the regular. But when you said... I mean, it did sound like...
Yeah, they couldn't find anything. Like, and I looked and I was like, surely. Like, but... And I am not one to, I'm saying this lightly, like I understand like substances can alter your mental state, but I will say this, you can't use that excuse for both things. So either you have no idea why you did this because you were intoxicated, but you were coherent enough to bind them, rape a girl, drive away, murder two cops, like
get pulled over, kill two yeah. cops, drive away again, hitchhike back.
Like, no, I'm sorry, but I'm calling bullshit on that. You know exactly what happened. And I think that it was a power situation. Like he was in a, like, you know, you were in jail for a petty burglary. Like it was like not. I'm yeah. also assuming that's why he used a fake name is because he had a felony. So,
yeah. Did they ever? His family probably didn't even know about that burglary. You know, like
no, because it was 50 years prior.
Yikes!
It's insane. Like
insane.
When I was researching this, I was like, he's gonna like do it again, right? Like this is a pretty brutal.
That's firsties. What I think.
Like, no.
I guess it wasn't at first because he. It escalated from robbery to this to, you know, robbing actual just people, but ugh, gross.
I also go back to like thinking like, had he just stopped at that stoplight and went on about his business?
Yeah.
This would not be something we would ever talk about because
it sounds like they got through like the whole ticketing process or whatever, talking to him and they were just going back to the car.
Well, I read that he was unable to produce a driver's license.
Okay.
And like a registration. So I read that in a few different articles and it was like I don't know if the paper that he waved, like the Officer Phillips waved to Officer Porter, like a hey, like I don't know if that was like the registration to the car that he was going to take back. Like, you know, like you take this back and you're going to realize like this is not your car. Like this uh-huh. car is stolen. But then again, it's like 1957. So I also don't, they're not running names through computers, yeah, you know, like it's.
That's what I was thinking. Like they're not going to be able to just like go type in the license plate number mm-hmm. and see what pops up.
Yeah. So I really don't know why he killed the cops, because I think that had he just went about his business, like they wouldn't have arrested him, because it wasn't until after the bodies of the officers were found that the teenagers were even able to file a report or like get help. I mean, he left them in the middle of like nowhere. And they had to walk back by themselves, and they like had no clothes. Like they were traumatized, obviously.
Yeah. It's awful.
Yeah. It's awful. It's like awful in a different way. And it like than like what we normally give for awful.
They're always awful. It's always awful.
But I love a cold case that gets solved.
Yeah.
And it's satisfying when it's like you thought you got away with it, you little.
Yeah, it is always the best when they're
you
like.
You thought you got away with it?
Like, I hate that they've been free for so long, but just mm-hmm. like that, like, smugness you get seeing someone who, like, they finally get the justice they deserve. That's
I don't know how criminals in any crime, like not even ones like as horrific as this. I don't understand how criminals in any crime like go so long without losing their shit. Cause I remember like lying to my parents in like high school and being like, what? Like every time they talk to me, I have such a guilty like conscience. It'll be like, I haven't even done anything. And my supervisor is like, hey, can you come to my office? And I'm like, I'm getting fired.
Today's the day.
Today's the day. Or even like,
you know, you've not done anything wrong, but you're like, but maybe yeah. I did.
Did maybe. I do something? Maybe. Or like when my husband's like, hey, can we talk about something? I'm like, he's about to divorce me right here, right now. He has the papers. We're going to court today. This is what's happening.
He's just like, can you make dinner tomorrow?
Yeah, like, hey,
oh man,
I don't know how they do it. I needed a break from Christmas because I got sick on Christmas, and I was like, fuck Christmas at this point.
Christmas was crazy. My dad rolled his truck.
Yeah.
He bought a new one now, but he was driving home from our house on Christmas morning, and he called me, and I was like, hey, you forgot your thermos. And he was like, hey, I rolled my truck. I was like, what?
This is not breakfast conversation. What do you mean? Why are you so calm?
Well, no. He told me he went into a ditch first. I was like, okay, yeah, so can you like you get that. Out? Do you need help? He's like, no, I rolled into a ditch. I was like, that's a little different, okay?
That's a lot different.
And so he literally just got it. He like got his truck towed back to his house and got a ride back to his house. And that was it. He said he was fine. No scratch on him.
I
bought the same exact truck, just a newer model.
I love him.
Such a dad move.
I love him so much. I have been literally dodging COVID now for 2 weeks. Like the office I work at, well, the hospital I work at, like one of the clinics that does like LASIK and PRK, like everyone got freaking COVID there. I was like, hell yeah, I'm better than everyone. I didn't get COVID.
And I'm then, better than everyone. You're going to get just for thinking like that. That's well, why I it's coming the same for you.
When my husband got it, I was like, am I? It's like that TikTok. Am I better than everyone?
Than everyone?
And I kept making the joke. And COVID is not a laughing matter. I get that. But I kept making the joke. I was like, COVID steps into my body and it's like, hey, what we got going on here? And it's like coffee, energy drinks, Diet Coke. And it's like, no water, no fruits and vegetables. Like, bye. I don't want any part of this. I cannot thrive in these conditions.
This is karma,
though.
This is karma for you for saying it'll never happen.
Mm-hmm. I kept was like, like, I am immune now at this point. And I was like, maybe I just have like a superior gene pool than my husband. And I'm just like better. I'm not.
My insides are coated with 24 karat gold. Viruses just bounce off of them.
COVID was always like, I cannot thrive under these conditions. And I'm like, sis, me either. Like,
no one's thriving up in here.
I'm trying. And then we had family over on Sunday, Monday night at like 12:30. My husband barges into the bedroom because, of course, I can't be left to sleep. And like, he has to be like, did you see that text message in the family group chat? It was like, hey, my sister has COVID. And I was like, what the? And hashtag I just instantly again. Was like, I'm gonna get it. God, is that you giving me a lesson?
The time.
But I have had a headache. Like, we tested negative, but, like, obviously, like, we're going to test again. So, hopefully, it's just, gnarly I don't cold. Know, gnarly
hopefully
cold.
Hopefully, it's a gnarly cold. Yeah.
Send good vibes. I'll let y'all know by the weekend if I've died.
I'll let you know if she's dead, honestly. She probably won't be able to. I'll be like, guys.
I might.
This is it.
Other than that, I hope everyone had a good Christmas. I'm most annoyed, not that I'm like, I'm most annoyed that I got that gnarly Lego flower kit.
I know, I want to see that.
Oh, well, let me show you because I have it right here.
Oh, man, we saw a commercial. We were watching YouTube and we saw a commercial for it. And my daughter was like, that's the coolest Lego I've ever seen. And I was like, Connie just got that for Christmas. Yeah.
I love my husband for getting me that. He ordered it off of Amazon, so I know for a fact he spent more on it than he would have had he just like went to Target
and picked it up. Yeah, remember when Amazon used to be the place that you'd go for like the cheapest deal?
Mm-hmm.
You're like, this is how I get it the cheapest, and now that is not the case. It's just where it's most convenient.
Yeah, I just got today my oh my god, I have to say this because it's like hilarious. Meg doesn't read reviews anymore, but no, I have to,
I don't.
Because I'm like psycho. And I just read one today that was like the first 10 minutes, which that's not true. I'm calling bullshit on that. But it's like the last 10 minutes is just talking. And it's like, we tell you that. Like, we tell you. Like, obviously the case is over. You can stop listening. It's okay. We're not mad. But anyways, I just thought of us like chatting and I'm like, heh. Nice.
Yeah, I did not see that. I occasionally look, but I try not to. Because I don't want to get, like, I don't want to get, like, a big head from the good ones. And I don't want to get, like, a hurt heart from the mean ones.
I like to feel both.
I like the chaos of the ups and downs.
I like people reviews. Telling us that they like us. And I'm like, I love you too. Because it still blows my mind. Sometimes I'm like, wait, you guys listen to us talk?
Sweet. And shout out to the Goodwill cashier today who told me that they listened to our podcast. That's the second time I've been in that Goodwill, and that has happened. So obviously our people are there thrift shopping.
I still have not had that happen to me, but I also don't go out of my way to make conversation with people in public.
No, she apologized. She was like, I'm sorry if I was staring at you. I listen to your podcast every week. And I was like, thank you. She was very nice, very sweet. And then another Ohio? Cashier. Huh?
Ohio, where the hell are you at?
Ohio, recognize Connie in the grocery store or something.
I don't go. Now that I
don't
say
go
that,
anywhere.
I'm like, who is going to recognize me? Where do I go? I'm going to have to just start going places like la-di-da-di-da.
Just talking really loud like I do to anyone who is near you, which is also what I do.
And I'm like, ah!
Nope. Talk to a lady in the toy aisle for like 5 minutes. Talk to a stranger over in the furniture section. Yeah. Ooh, just wherever.
I can't. Like, I literally, I don't know if anyone else, well, I'm sure they do. I'm praying that someone else has anxiety like this because I feel physically nauseous when I have to engage in conversation about either A, something I don't know about, or if you're surprising me with it.
Or like a person that you've never met before in your life.
Yeah, because I instantly feel, because I'm psycho, I instantly feel like they're looking at every part of my body, like thinking like because I criticize myself. So I'm like, they have to be thinking the same things that I think. And no. then I'm like, I can't do it.
No, I just tell myself all the time. I'm like, you are not that important, Meg. No one gives a shit. But I have to tell you, this lady in the toy aisle, she picked up this Little People Ariel thing, mm-hmm. like Disney Little Mermaid thing. And I had been eyeballing it. So I was like, dang it, that's gone. But then further down the thing, somebody had must have just gotten rid of their whole like Little Mermaid, Little People collection, because there was the boat. There was like the little house. There was all of it. And I was like, did you see that there was more of it over here? There's all of it. And I made her go back and get the rest. But I don't think she did. I just showed her. I was like, there's more.
I don't have that in me. Sometimes I really try. And the one of the funniest things.
I think you have it in you more than you think.
I freak myself out. But I'm also not good at like, I think it's small talk. Like I can engage with you in like real conversations and I love it. But I'm not good with small talk because I'm panic.
Only good with I can't go deeper than that. I'm just like great at small talk.
It's so funny how opposite we are. But we were talking in cover, like I was talking to my husband about I was like, well, I can fake it. Like I can fake, you know, being interested. And he's like, no. And I was like, what? He's like, you're joking, right? And I was like, no, what? He's like, Connie, you're not good at being fake. Like, I can tell you're being fake. I can tell when your eyes glaze over and like you're not listening. But he's like,
I don't even know.
He's like, I can look across the room when someone's talking to you and tell that you're like,
get me out of here.
I thrive where I don't have to censor how I speak because I do it every week. Like, I have a mouth of a 48-year-old factory worker, and I just
48-year-old factory
worker. I just let it specific. I know. I just let it fly. Like, it is inappropriate in most situations. And if I could talk like that to you, it's awesome.
It's a good thing.
It's good.
You have to know if she has to know if she can talk to you. Yeah. That way.
And like I say things like, oh, that's dope and that's pretty gnarly. And people are most of the time are like,
yeah, I'm just I'm very good at small talk. But if you want to know anything else past small talk, I don't want to engage that much. Just surface level stuff most of the time, unless I like really know you.
I'd say I struggle a lot with the classic ADHD where I don't know how to tell you like, oh my God, I'm so sorry you're dealing with this. I'm going to tell you a story about myself that so you know that like I can relate to you. And like
and then sometimes hope that you don't sound like self-centered.
Yeah. And like I realized like it took a lot of therapy to be like, oh, you're not supposed to. Some people don't like that. And I'm like, well, I'm not trying to like hijack your trauma. I'm just trying to be like, I'm here if you need it.
I understand what you're feeling. I do that also. I relate it. I'm doing it right now, but I relate it to myself. I'm like, yeah, it's just what I do too. You're like, oh yeah, I did this thing or this happened to me as well. And I think a lot of people do it, but I don't think. Yeah. Everyone loves that. But if you ever hear us do that to you, we're not trying to make it about us. That's just how we react.
It's almost like I too have some trauma.
Let us relate through it.
I don't know how to make you feel better, so I'm going to tell you how I feel better.
Here's a story.
Because yeah, I'm either going to tell you, I have to like actively engage in it or I'm glazed over and you're going to be like talking to me and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. What are we talking about?
If I, you know, if I do go deeper than like small talk, I normally overshare too, which is why I'm just like,
me too.
Like, I'll tell you all the things that happened in my life, but then I'll be like, why did I say all of those things? Why did I do that?
And I'm like, I'm the queen of like saying really awkward things and then like getting home and being like, that was fucking weird. Like,
that person's never going to talk to me again.
No, you're like telling me like I had a small fight with my boyfriend. And I'm like, my husband used to, not my current husband, my ex-husband used to physically abuse me. So I also know a thing to do about
mean.
And it's not mean funny partners. When it's, you know, we laugh so we don't like. I just joke. I'm not joking about domestic violence. I'm just like, I overshared. I'm so sorry. Like, I'm so sorry.
That's why we had to share.
And on that note, we have overshared.
Yeah. There we go. We're done.
We'll see you guys next
year. Bye. Oh,
if you are, real quick, if you are listening next week for our first episode, Meg and I are going to do a tag team episode where we are going to
Countdown 2021
crimes of 2021, because holy shit, there was a lot this year.
Like the craziest stuff in true crime that happened in the last year.
Yeah, like not necessarily like crimes themselves, but like breaks in cases, because it was a crazy year.
It's been a big year.
Thank you so much for listening to Gruesome, Horrific, True Crime.
We love you, beautiful strangers. And if you love us too, and you'd like us to keep putting out ad-free content, here are some of the ways that you can help support Gruesome.
You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. This helps other true crime connoisseurs find us, and you get a I knew them before they were famous moment.
Follow Gruesome Podcast on Instagram and talk to us on our posts. Engage with us. We love to hear from you there.
If you'd like to send a donation, we have a Patreon. Sign up to join our True Crime Sticker of the Month Club and to gain access to exclusive Patreon perks.
If a one-time donation is more your thing, you can find our Venmo at Gruesome Podcast and our PayPal using our email gruesomepodcast@gmail.com.
Speaking of which, we love hearing from you. It seriously makes our whole life. So send us questions, comments, suggestions, or just ask our opinion on whether or not that person you met on Tinder is a serial killer or not.
Tune in next week. And don't forget, lock your windows, lock your doors. And on Wednesdays,
we're gruesome.
Bye.
Bye.